I would like to welcome everyone for so kindly coming to attend the wonderful festival that we are offering for the pleasure of Krishna and all fortunate souls who come to participate in Krishna consciousness. We learn the art of living in harmony with reality. Real knowledge is to discriminate between reality and illusion, between truth and misconception. It is only this type of knowledge that can free us from the bondage of ignorance and can bring about real happiness. We are all seeking happiness. It is our nature. We are pleasure-seeking. Every soul is part of Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, every soul is seeking pleasure. However, without transcendental knowledge, we do not understand what is real pleasure and how to achieve it. In the guise of knowledge, this material world keeps us under the cloud of illusion. The word Maya means that which is not. We think we are this body, but we are not. We think we are this mind, but we are not. We think that giving pleasure to the body, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, and the ego will give us happiness, but it will not. So thus, Krishna appears within this world to reveal the truth and the path of real happiness. It is explained that after Krishna departed from this world at the end part of the Dwapara Yuga, he descended in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam to give light in this age of darkness. There is a beautiful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam which teaches us the art of living in this world in such a way that we can be liberated at every stage of our life, that we could come closer to God and truth and the love of our heart at every moment of life. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is non-different than Krishna. In fact, it is the very body of Krishna in word form or sound form. And the great acharyas have told us, if any one syllable of any one word of the Srimad Bhagavatam could be understood deeply, we would have realization of our eternal devotional service to Krishna. The particular verse that I am contemplating at this moment It is explained how if you water the root of a tree, then all the leaves, branches, twigs, and flowers are automatically satisfied. If you put food into the stomach of the body, then all the limbs and organs of the body are nourished. Contrary, if we do not put water in the root of the tree, no matter what grand arrangements we make to give health and nourishment to the tree, it will die. Gradual death. Starvation is not sudden. Starvation is gradual. After you eat, you don't feel the effects of hunger. As you become more and more hungry, you're not understanding that you're actually dying, because it's a gradual process. So similarly, if we do not put food in the stomach, we will die. No matter what else we do for every other limb, for our organs, for our hands, for our legs, for our head, we could give so many nice massages and everything else. But it will all die if the stomach is not fed. This is knowledge. It is common sense. In the same way, Krishna is the cause of everything that exists. He is the root of all that is. If Krishna is satisfied, we are satisfied. If Krishna is dissatisfied, any arrangement, but we are in a gradual state of starvation. So today we are celebrating the Chandan Yatra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is a wonderful festival because it has such a deeply philosophical significance. On one level, it's very simple and festive. But in Krishna consciousness, everything has deep philosophical significance. Every single thing a devotee does, from brushing his teeth to putting on tilak, to cutting the hairs, has a deep, profound philosophical significance that even the greatest philosophers of the ages cannot understand. So on this day, we cover the beautiful murti of Krishna with chandan. Chandan is very cooling. This season is the most hot of all seasons. It is the summer. And people who are in the bodily concept of life are always trying to get some relief from the miseries of material existence. When it is too cold, we want to put on warm clothes, we want to stand near fire, we want to put so many heating systems in our house for relief. When it is very hot, we will be putting on the fans, or we will run to our air-conditioned abodes, or we will be drinking all sorts of cooling drinks, or we will lay down and go to sleep. Somehow or other, we want to escape from the suffering of too much heat. But here we are, in the middle of the hottest time in the summer, in a small temple room with not so much ventilation, crowded in, crushed against each other practically, about 700 people in one little room, And when you breathe, cold air doesn't come out. It's warm air. When 800 people are breathing, it makes everything even hotter. And yet, in this crowded room of 700-800 people in the middle of the summer, not even are we just sitting. We're dancing. We're dancing, and everyone's perspiring like anything. Every pore of everyone's body is emanating more heat. And yet, devotees are smiling. Why? Because they are doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. So on this hot day, devotees come together to put very nice chandan, sandalwood, to cool the body of Krishna. Gopal, the beautiful deity of our temple who is accepting this service, he is so merciful to engage us in watering the root of the tree. Actually, it is not an easy thing to make so much sandalwood into pulp. For many days, there has been practically all day long, for the last 4 or 5 days, 5, 6, 7 devotees sitting from morning till night, just grinding the sandalwood into pulp. Grinding, grinding, grinding. It's hard labor. In the middle of the summer, they're grinding, 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 without even putting one drop of it on themselves to cool themselves. In the middle of the heat, they're grinding the sandalwood. And their sandalwood is so cool and refreshing, and they're putting camphor in it and saffron in it. The tendency is just let me enjoy. I've made a liter of sandalwood. At least give me a teaspoon. Not even the consideration. The only consideration is this is for Krishna. Krishna will be satisfied. And when we see Sri Shalagram Srila Tulsi Devi being very nicely bathed with drops of cool, fresh, pure water, it cools our hearts. So this is the process of actual spiritual progress, to learn how to satisfy Krishna. Tapo divyam putrika yena sattvam. Real tapasya means simply to make Krishna happy. To torture your own body is not real tapasya. But to make Krishna happy is real tapasya. Because that is the actual nature of our soul, to make Krishna happy. Without Krishna's mercy, we cannot come out of the illusion of Maya. So somehow, to get Krishna's mercy, do you think that Krishna needs our sandalwood? Do you think that Krishna cannot keep himself cool? He is the controller of the wind. He is the controller of everything. If Krishna wants to be cool, then he can be cool in any situation. Krishna has the thermostat to the sun planet in his hands. He can make the sun anything he wants it to be, anywhere he wants it to be. So why are we working so hard just to give this satisfaction to Krishna? Krishna is the source of all food. In these summer days, there are devotees in the kitchen. Kitchen cooking for 1,000 people. Big, big stoves with blazing fires. Today I went down to see how to feel how the cooking was going on. And there we saw some of our brahmacharis. Big pot, blazing fire, small room, crowded with people. One pot is blazing a huge, one fire is cooking a massive pot of sabji, another rice. Other devotees are standing over smoking ghee, cooking puris in the heat of the summer. Haribo. I remember a place I used to live. There was only wood fires for cooking for Krishna. And we would cook big, big feasts on Sunday for so many people. In the winter, it was all snow. Snow was pouring down. Ice cold. It's like Badrinath. Same temperature as Badrinath in the winter. Some people, tapasya going to Badrinath. But actually, tapasya going anywhere to serve Krishna is just as good or better. So freezing cold by Fahrenheit, 20 below zero. Haribo. And yet, everyone wanted to cook on that day. Everyone wanted to cook. Because there was no heat in any of the buildings, no heat anywhere. But if you cook, you could be near fire. So then, being near that smoking ghee and cooking puris was sense gratification. And stirring that pot of sabji was, very nice. But the thing is, it was so cold that when you'd stir the pot, your front side was warm, but your back side was freezing. So you learn the art of half the time stirring front ways and half the side. Making circles. So somehow or other, equally distribute the mercy of the fire. But when the summer comes, then we find, it's not the most popular service. It's the most unpopular service. For those who are still thinking in terms of what is nice for me. But when we understand that when Krishna is satisfied, the soul is satisfied, the heart is satisfied. And the purpose of our life is to realize that. We may not be on that advanced platform now, but we will act on that platform so that by the mercy of Krishna we can realize it. This is the process of devotional service. Devotees are cooking, 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 cooking. In the middle of the summer, for hundreds of people, blazing fires. Somebody could come in and say, why are you doing like this? Krishna doesn't need you to cook to eat. Krishna's being served by the goddess of fortune. Thousands and thousands of such goddesses of fortune in the spiritual world. However, out of his mercy, he allows us. Krishna feels hungry for our love. Krishna is hungry for the love of his devotee. And similarly, being part and parcel of Krishna, we are hungry for the love of Krishna. Real hunger is not for something material. The perverted reflection of the hunger of our soul for the love of Krishna is manifested through hunger for food or hunger for pleasure, from hunger to see something, to hear something. Actually, Krishna is eternally hungry for the love of his devotee. And the soul is eternally hungry for the love of Krishna. And that is the reciprocation of truth. So we understand that by satisfying Krishna, we are actually bringing about the real welfare to ourselves and to others. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, para upakar, the greatest of all welfare work is to give another Krishna consciousness. It is the ultimate charity to give someone Krishna, because everyone needs Krishna. What is the ultimate charity to a plant that's dying? To sing a song to the leaf? To fan it? To put a beautiful pearl necklace around it? To make a nice house for it? Is that real love for a dying plant? Real love is to pour water on its root. That is love. That is welfare work. Real welfare work. So real charity within this world is to awaken a person's Krishna consciousness. To teach a person how to water the root of their very life by serving Krishna, by satisfying Krishna. As I'm giving this class, I can see people are hot and tired and hungry. So that's good. You're getting some realizations of what I'm saying. But meanwhile, Krishna has just had a big, wonderful feast. About a 50-100 preparation feast he just had with all sorts of delicious items on the plate, and also everything in the kitchen, all those big, big pots, he ate it all. And he's just been fanned with peacock fans. And now he's covered with wonderful cooling sandalwood, camphor, and saffron. He's simply enjoying. And we're down here. Waiting for the lecture to end. However, when we make a very deliberate meditation in our consciousness that if Krishna is happy, that is my real happiness. Whether I realize it or not, that may take some time. Even if I suffer to make Krishna happy, that is my happiness. That is not something that you can sentimentally preserve in your mind, that type of consciousness. You have to be philosophically convinced, and you have to have the desire that yes, if Krishna is happy, I am happy. If Krishna is satisfied, my life is complete. And if Krishna is not, my life is a failure. Tomorrow is the appearance day of Sita, the eternal consort of Lord Sri Ramchandra. how much she embodied this principle. So much can be spoken in this matter, but something we will try to say. Sita, the daughter of Maharaj Janak, from the great dynasty of King Nimi. Maharaj Nimi was a very, very great Paramahamsa devotee. And he had a son named Mithi, who became the next king. And from him, the kingdom became named Mithila. And from that time, all the kings who were descendants of Maharaj Nimi were named Janak. There were so many Maharaja Janaks. One of them, his name was Devaratha. This Devaratha was very, very great devotee. At the time, there was a ferocious war between the demigods and the demons. And the demigods very much wanted the help of Lord Shiva. So he came, and there were three abodes of the demons. Lord Shiva is known as Tripurari because with his great bow and arrow he destroyed all those three abodes of the demons. So this was a very powerful bow. Actually, at one time, Vishwakarma, he made two incredibly powerful bows. He gave one to Shiva and one to Vishnu. So Shiva used that bow to destroy the demons. And another time, there was a yajna, and Daksha, he did not offer any oblation to Lord Shiva. So he also came with that bow to destroy all the gods if they didn't surrender to him. So they all surrendered. And ultimately Lord Shankar gave that bow to Devaratha, one of the Janak kings of Mithila, who kept that bow for generations and generations. One of the Maharaj Janaks who appeared just prior to the advent of Lord Sri Ram. Once he was plowing a field for the purpose of creating the proper environment for yajna or sacrifice, the sacrificial arena. This was one of the rituals of the days of the past, is that when the king would perform a yajna, he would personally plow the sacrificial area as a tapasya. So as he was doing, a beautiful, beautiful little girl came out of the ground. He named her Sita because she was born from the earth itself. And he vowed that this girl is more dear to me than my very life. She is born of the earth herself. Only the most heroic, pure-hearted man of the highest character can take the hand of my daughter in marriage. In fact, he vowed, it will have to be the person who could lift this bow and string it. But this was Shiva's bow. Very powerful. When Lord Sri Ram came to Mithila with Lakshman under the direction of Srila Vishwamitra Muni, the story of this bow was explained by Maharaj Janak to them. He explained how this bow is so big and so great that up till today no one has been able to lift it off of its altar. The greatest warriors, the greatest gods have come, princes and kings, and none of them have even been able to lift it up. There was a whole big stadium built around this bow. And one time all the kings came and none of them could do it, so they became so angry they all attacked King Janak to take Sita by force. There was a massive war that lasted for 12 months. And Maharaj Janak, because when you're fighting a war, you need a lot of money to fight a war. So after 12 months, his whole kingdom was practically bankrupt. In the sense it had no more wealth, he utilized everything. Then he performed yajna to please the great Lord and the gods. And by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, he was given the power and the strength and the wealth to conquer all opposition. When he saw the beauty of Lord Ram, he was thinking, if only Sita could be married to Ram, that will be the perfection of all my heart's desires. So he invited Ram to see the bow. And then the bow was called to be brought in. Over 500 of the biggest, strongest men in the entire kingdom were struggling, straining to pull the bow in. It was on a chariot with 8 wheels. Not exactly a chariot, but just like a platform, a black platform with 8 wheels. And they struggled, strained somehow or other to pull it on wheels into the assembly. And Ram looked at the bow. Vishwamitra Muni and Janak both said, "Now, you try." Ram took the dust of the feet of his guru, Vishwamitra Muni, and said, "Do I have your blessings? With your blessings comes all power. With the instructions of the guru comes the power to fulfill that instruction." This was Ram's meditation. Vishwamitra Muni gave blessings. So Ram, as if that bow was a feather, he just lifted it. Everyone was thousands and thousands of people. They couldn't even breathe. How is this possible? Ram is just a little boy. He's only a teenager. Even Ravana and the greatest conquerors of the world couldn't lift that bow with all the strength of their arms. And he's just lifted it as it was a toy. Then he went to pull the string. He pulled it closer and closer and closer to his ear as he held it out. And then the bow cracked. This crack was like a universal thunderbolt. You know what a local thunderbolt sounds like. It's very frightening. Everyone, babies cry, and even the rats run into their holes. Bombay, I've seen during monsoons. This is a universal thunderbolt. Such a thunderbolt that it's come crashing into the whole universe. When that bow broke, the entire earth planet began to shake to its very core. The planets in the heavens began to tremble in fear. And every person in that assembly fell unconscious just by the power of the vibration and sound of that bow cracking. The only four people that were not unconscious were Janak, Vishwamitra Muni, Ram and Lakshman. And after some time, everyone came back to consciousness. And Janak immediately, he sent his messengers and ministers to Ayodhya to inform Dasarath Maharaj that he wanted to give his daughter Sita to Ram in marriage. When Dasarath Maharaj received this news in Ayodhya, he was so happy. But what did he do? He did not say, yes, let us send the procession to Ayodhya. The first thing Dasarath did is he approached the great sages, Vasishtha Muni and others. And he asked, what should I do? What is your will? Does this have your blessings? They all said, yes, let us go to Mithila. This was the Raja Rishis of the past. The great kings, they always took the guidance and the blessings of saintly persons. That is why they were such great kings. That is why they had the love and the affection of all the people. Now we have so many isms, capitalism, communism, socialism, atheism. But in those days, there was God consciousness. There was culture. That those who are deeply learned in the scriptures, they know what is truth. And the great leaders were always seeking advice from them. Even Lord Ram, he was a kshatriya, he was a king. He would not even lift the bow until he received the instructions and the permission of his guru, the great Brahman Vishwamitra. So then the procession began. They built beautiful road. Immediately, the next day they left. And within about 5 days they reached Mithila, and Janak and Dasarath met each other. They were both very old, learned, wise, and saintly kings. And they made all the arrangements for the marriage. Sita has a sister named Urmila. And Ram has a brother named Lakshman, said Evo. And the brother of Maharaj Janak, he had two daughters, Shrutakirti and Mandavi. So they married Bharat and Satrughna. It was all arranged. And all beautiful arrangements and festivities were taking place. And ultimately, Janak brought his daughter Sita before the sacred fire and before Sri Ram and said, today I give my daughter to you as a shadow, as always follows a person. Similarly, my daughter will always be engaged in your service. She will never separate herself from you. And to this day, the proper marriage ceremony is the father is supposed to repeat those same words. That is the vow. Not only of the wife and husband, but also the parents, they take vow. There you go. Of course, in the West, they don't. They just pay some money and get a certificate. Of course, you could do it vows, but if you don't want, you can just pay some money and get certificate. And if you pay some more money, you can discard the certificate. That is the unfortunate condition. And Sita brought the garland of her love and Ram the garland of his love, and they exchanged the garlands, and marriage took place. Anyways, we know the story of how in Ayodhya, Kaikeyi caused Dasarath Maharaj to banish Ram from the kingdom. It is a wonderful story. When Ram heard this news, he was ready to protect the honor of his father and go to the forest for 14 years. So he went to tell Sita. He was very distraught at the thought of separation from Sita, but even more depressed by the thought of, if Sita came to the forest with me, what would happen to her? So he told her, I will go to the forest for 14 years, and you will stay here in Ayodhya under the care of Dasarath Maharaj and Kausalya and Bharat, my brother. He will be the king. He will certainly take care of you with all love and affection. So you be happy here, and I will return after 14 years. He gave a very grave and firm instruction to his consort. When Sita heard this, it was unbearable. She began to tremble and to cry, weeping and weeping and weeping. Her heart was utterly broken. My dear Ram, you cannot leave me behind. How is it possible? Do you not know that the wife is half of the body of the husband? At the time of actual marriage, the spirit of the vow is that we become one body, inseparable. And when Kaikeyi made this arrangement to banish you to the forest, she didn't say half of you. She said, you. There, and I'm half. I'm half of you, so I must go. My father vowed at marriage that I would be like your shadow, that the wife must be the shadow of the husband in the sense that she never leaves the service of her husband, no matter what difficulties may be there. If you have a bad day in business, does your shadow go away? If you eat the wrong food and you're suffering indigestion, does your shadow disappear? No matter what difficulties, your shadow is right there with you. Husband and wife are meant to be like that, according to Krishna consciousness. So she explained like this, I must go with you. If you try to keep me back, you will break the heart of my father. You think he will be proud of me to be separate from my husband? You will make him into a liar. He will be a disgrace. We must protect the honor of my father's vow. We must protect the honor of my vow. Where you go, I go. So when she spoke, Lord Ram explained, you do not know what you are saying, Sita. I am going into the forest. It is not an easy life. You are accustomed to sleeping on very, very soft beds, made out of silk and cotton. But in the forest, you know what your bed will be? Hard, uneven ground. and whatever dry leaves fall from the trees, that will be your mattress. You are accustomed to very nice foods prepared by the king's personal cooks. In the forest, you will have to dig in the ground for some dry roots, or whatever fruits fall from the trees. There may be and there may not be. Some days you will have to fast completely, and some days you may find something to eat. You are accustomed to living in this beautiful city of Ayodhya with so many armies around us to protect us. However, in the forest, there are tigers, there are lions, there are serpents, there are scorpions, there are mosquitoes, there are wild boars, there are dangerous birds. There's an animal that has 8 legs that eats lions and tigers. In Satya Yuga, there were such animals. And where we're going in the jungle, they have never seen a human being before. And there are rakshasas and rakshashis who are always thirsty and hungry to drink the blood and eat the flesh of humans. Everywhere. And at night, it is pitch black in darkness, and you cannot see anything, and there is no lights anywhere. And you are surrounded by all these snakes and lions and tigers and boars and rakshasas and scorpions and other types of beasts. And when it rains, there is no shelter. And when it is cold, there is no shelter. And when it is burning hot, Sita, how will you survive? Your beautiful silken hair, you will go matted. There are no combs or brushes or mirrors. For 14 years, you will not see a mirror. How is that possible for a woman, even for one day, to not look at you? And the water. Sometimes days and days and days will go by, we will not even see a drop of water. And other times when we see water, it may be infested with hundreds and thousands of man-eating crocodiles. And it may be dirty and polluted. But what choice will you have? And when we have to cross these waters, sometimes torrents, streams, rivers, with all sorts of dangerous fish, crocodiles, and other aquatics, we will have to cross beyond it. How will you survive? You stay home in this beautiful city of Ayodhya, where you will be well protected and well fed and happy, and I will return. Ram was actually weeping, just thinking of Sita going to the forest. When Sita Devi received this order, she fell to the ground crying. It was unbearable for her to even imagine life without Ram. She said, "My Ram, what you are saying is not correct. You are saying there are many dangers and discomforts in the forest. But if I am with you, if I am serving you and pleasing you, I will not even notice them. Ram said, there are thorns in the forest that will pierce and tear apart your soft skin. Sita said, I will walk in front of you, and with my feet and my body, I will make all those thorns, I will trample them down until they're very soft, pleasing powder, so that your feet will be satisfied. Any inconvenience that is there, it will be my life and soul not to suffer from it, but to make it pleasing for you. What danger is there if I am with you? What suffering can there be if I am with you? If one is experiencing the highest pleasure, that if a little pain comes, it is not even noticeable. This is the nature of love. My life and soul is to serve you and satisfy you under any circumstance of life or death. No matter if I am in your service, then the forest will be Ayodhya. But if I am not doing your service, then Ayodhya will become the forest. So, my Ram, if I'm with you, the tree bark will be the most luxurious silken gowns to me. If I am in your service, pleasing you, Ram, then the roots of the ground will be the most delicious nectarine foodstuffs that even the gods cannot achieve. If I am with you, Ram, then the lions and the tigers and the crocodiles and the boars and the pythons and the cobras and the scorpions and the mosquitoes, they will all be like our family members and friends. Sometimes in this world, our family members and friends are like them. If I am with you, Ram, then fasting will be like feasting. Then taking cold water baths in the rivers will be like diving into pools of nectar. When you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is satisfied. This was Sita Devi's devotion. Simply for the pleasure of Ram, she will live. She was weeping and crying as she was speaking these things, in such terrible fear that Ram would leave her behind. She was pleading, begging, please take me. You must take me. If you do not take me, then I will not be able to live even one day in Ayodhya. If you do not take me, it is like having me drink deadly poison, having me drown in the darkest ocean, and having me burn in the hottest blazing fire simultaneously. Hare Krishna. This was her desire. Not to enjoy Ram, but to serve Ram. This is the standard of what is real devotion. Let me blissfully live in your service. If you take me with you, that 14 years, I will pray that it just goes on and on and on. because it will only last like a moment for me. But if you leave me behind, this 14 years will seem like eternity. I am your servant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed in this way. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha khamaye mama janamani jamanishwari bhavata bhakti rahoit ki pai. My Lord, if you... I am not wanting money or beautiful woman or man. I do not want fame, popularity, or even relief of pain, liberation. Only I want to serve you birth after birth after birth. The happiness of a devotee is in serving, in pleasing Krishna, Guru, Vaishnavas, and all living beings by giving the charity of Krishna. When Krishna is satisfied, the root of the tree, the stomach of the body is nourished. This is knowledge. It is very simple, but it is very deep. And to live by this principle is very difficult in this age of Kali Yuga. However, in the association of devotees, it becomes blissful. When we see Gopal decorated with beautiful, beautiful chandan, if we are advanced devotees, we feel our hearts are completely cooled. Actual happiness is in your heart. Actual happiness is not a matter of your body or your senses. It is a matter of your heart. You can be in the best, robust health. You can be in a nice air-conditioned palace. You can have the nicest foods and still be miserable. Hare Krishna. But if your heart is satisfied, any situation, whether you're in the palace or whether you're in the jungle, you'll be satisfied. Happiness is a matter of your heart. It is not a matter of the condition of your body. Sita, her heart, her happiness was in serving Ram. It didn't matter where she was. When Ram heard Sita's words, he said, "Yes, Sita, you come. I cannot leave you behind. Impossible. Such devotion. I must take you with me." So when a materialistic person sees in the heat of the summer, devotees are grinding sandal all day and putting camphor and putting and not putting a drop on their own foreheads. They're cooking and cooking and cooking in the hot summer heat. Next Sunday is Narasingha Chaturdasi. So there's a fast. So people are cooking. And they're not even allowed to eat. They're perspiring and they're not even allowed to drink. Materialistic people think, "You crazy people, what is this? Why don't you take the sandalwood and put it on yourself? Why are you putting it on a statue? All this food, why don't you eat it? Why are you feeding it to statues? And you're fasting. And all these nice ornaments and clothes. Put it on, enjoy life. That's what it's for." They get their lot. They get the result. Their hearts are starving. They may have plenty of food and plenty of chandan all over their bodies.
but their hearts are starving. But for a devotee, when we see Krishna decorated, very nice.
And if we are not so advanced, when we see Krishna decorated in this way and we are helping to satisfy Krishna in this way, we are longing to understand, we are longing for Krishna's mercy to realize this wonderful pastime of his. Because it is a reciprocation of love. Chandanyatra is a festival of pleasing Krishna. And every day of our life should be in that mood. When Krishna says, all that you eat, all that you do, all that you offer and give away should be done as an offering to me, he is not saying that for his own sake. He is saying that for our sake. When a doctor comes to give you medicine, he's not doing it for his sake. He's doing it for your sake. If you have malaria, and the doctor comes and says, take this medicine or you will die, the doctor doesn't have malaria. So he's not giving you the medicine because it's going to benefit his health. He's doing it for you. When Krishna speaks in the scriptures, sarva dharmam paritya jamam ekam sharanam braja, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me, always think of me. He's saying it as a medicine for you. Why? He wants to give you an ocean of transcendental ecstasy. He wants to give it to you. He's saying, take it, surrender, and I'll give it to you. I can't give it to you unless you surrender. What does surrender mean? It means opening your heart and saying, yes, I accept. That's all surrender means. People have such a conception of surrender. It means I have to give up this. Oh no, it means I have to give up eating onions. Impossible. It means I have to give up drinking chai? Everyone drinks chai. The British drink chai. It must be good. I'm supposed to not watch television? What is this surrender? Irrational, impossible. People are thinking surrender is so difficult. But actually, what does surrender mean? Surrender simply means opening your heart and saying, Krishna, I accept your mercy. That's all. But you have to do all these other things to open your heart. Very well. You can't even get to your heart as long as it's covered by all these other habits. Krishna, I'm just accepting your mercy. And to accept the mercy of Krishna means to be in the mood of a servant. Yani sa sarva bhutanam. Bhagavad Gita explains what is day for a devotee is night for a conditioned soul. And what is day for a conditioned soul is night, sleeping time for devotee. Materialistic people are eager to enjoy honor, respect, popularity, to enjoy the various objects of the gross and subtle senses, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But for a devotee, he's asleep to these things. He wants to serve. He wants to water the root of the tree.
He wants to please Krishna. And how to please Krishna? By serving, by hearing his glories, by chanting his holy name. Krishna within our heart is satisfied by that spirit of service, by that spirit of glorifying the Lord as one's life and soul. So that is actually the meaning of Chandan Yatra. Krishna so kindly accepts our love, and by doing so, our lives become perfect. So this simple lesson must be very deeply understood within our hearts. Do not think that happiness is in enjoying or accumulating more and more facilities for enjoyment. Happiness is in service. Devotional service. Not service to the illusions, but service to God. Real charity is giving that service to others. Srila Prabhupada was para upakar. He was the most munificent welfare worker. He was giving charity. The greatest charity to everyone without discrimination. And what was the charity he was giving? He was giving us the chance to serve. In the material sense, that doesn't sound like charity. Prabhupada would say, go out all day long and distribute these books. Does that sound like charity? Go out and collect money and build this temple. Give all the money to build the temple. And you work. Is that charity? Yes, it is. It's the ultimate charity. Because he was engaging us in the service of the Lord. Not for himself, but for the Lord. So the supreme charity is to teach people how to serve Krishna. Because in service there is real happiness, eternal happiness. So somehow or other, we must very conscientiously kick out from this terrible ego of ours the desire to be the enjoyer. And replace it with the desire to be a servant. Sometimes even in our devotional service, we want to be the enjoyer. We want the recognition for what we do. But how long does recognition last? It's fleeting like the wind. One day they love you, one day they hate you. One day you're number one, one day you're number last. The nature of the world. Wherever there's praise, no, the other side of the coin is blame. If you take one, the other comes. Hare Krishna. They're inseparable. Success, failure. It's the way of the world. So we'll do whatever for the service of Krishna, for the service of his devotees. When Krishna's devotees are served, Krishna is satisfied. Servant of the servant of the servant. That is our happiness. That is our purpose. That is the underlying consideration of every decision we should make in our life. How to better be the servant of the servant of the servant. not how to be the enjoyer. The happiness of being enjoyer is simply the empty, superficial. It's like Prabhupada explained, the husk of rice with no rice inside. What is the use of a husk with no rice? Hare Krishna. It appears to be something, but it's not. There's no substance. So let us, on this very, very special and holy day, let us meditate on what it really means to be the servant of the servant of the servant, and understand the difference between trying to serve and trying to enjoy, trying to give and trying to take. When you give to the root, you are nourished. When you take from the root, you are inflicting future suffering on your own self. So Krishna consciousness is very sublime, simple and sublime. Just serve with devotion. Be eager to serve. Put aside all other considerations and be eager to serve. Don't be deluded by the propaganda of this world. Prabhupada came to Texas. He saw a big, big university with a big, big tower. And they told him that students climbed to the top when they failed their exams and they jumped down to commit suicide. Prabhupada said, this is modern civilization. You build big, high air-conditioned skyscrapers. You climb all the way to the top and you jump down to commit suicide. There's a frustration. Either literally or in spirit. So our position is the humble servant of the servant of the servant. Whether we're serving in a palace or serving under a tree. Whether we're serving by walking with our feet or serving by driving in nice cars or flying in big airplanes. The mood should always be how to serve, not how to enjoy. Enjoying means misery, ignorance. Serving means light, truth, and happiness. What is the greatest service in this age of Kali Yuga? To illuminate our hearts and the hearts of others through the loud congregational chanting of sometimes people have come to me and they have been very much charmed by the atmosphere of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath temple. It is not that they say, oh, your temple is so big and so beautiful and such high, wonderful domes on the top. No, but I've never heard anyone say like that. But people have said that I felt such happiness in your temple, such relief in your temple, because so many people are so eager to serve. That is opulence. Where there's a temple or where there's a society with people eager to selflessly serve, to extend themselves, to go out of their way to serve Krishna and others, that's opulence, that's wealth. That gives people joy and happiness. I don't think anybody here has come because of the chandelier.
even though it's the most expensive part of our temple room. Most of us don't even notice that it's there. We come because there's so many people who are eager to serve, eager to chant, eager to share Krishna with each other, eager to put themselves second and help others become first. That atmosphere makes people happy, and it makes us happy, and to the degree we have that atmosphere, we'll be in bliss, we'll be united, and we'll put anyone who comes here in bliss, a happiness they can never achieve in this material society. If they go out and make hundreds of crores of rupees, if they go out and win all sorts of sporting tournaments, if they go out and do all sorts of other things, they will not find the happiness is coming and just being in the association of people who genuinely want to serve without any spirit of taking. It's a transcendental happiness. That's the substance of what we're looking for in life. To have that pure, unconditional mood of being the servant of the servant of the servant. To give the charity of that knowledge to others. And when we chant the holy names in that spirit, then how Krishna is pleased to manifest himself. Krishna is the center. Our unity is in serving Krishna. Srila Prabhupada constructed temples to unify society with Krishna in the center. For this festival, some people were putting chandan to make jewelry. Chandan jewelry. We have seen. Some people are putting chandan on body of Krishna. Some people are making garlands for Krishna. Some people are cooking big, big pots for Krishna. Some are cooking little, little pots for Krishna. Some are cleaning the temple for Krishna. Some are managing for Krishna. Some are inviting people for Krishna. Some are singing for Krishna, dancing for Krishna. Some are speaking for Krishna. Some are trying to stay awake in class for Krishna. Some are waiting to eat prasad for Krishna. And everyone is united with Krishna in the center. In this way, the whole world should learn to coordinate, to all perform our respective duties for the pleasure of Krishna, in the service of Krishna. This is Lord Chaitanya's great gift. Come together, glorify Krishna, chant, dance, make wonderful offerings of our hearts, desires to Krishna.